chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Jean DeVries Sands on the show today. Jean is the Chief Information Officer at Summit BHC. Well, welcome to the Something Extra podcast, Jean. I am so delighted that we can make this work. And I know how busy you are. You're a big time CIO and busy, but I appreciate you so much making the time to be on the show today.
Thanks so much, Lisa. I'm excited to be here today.
Yes, I am too. So you and I first met because your husband, Edward, was speaking at one of our TechLX events, and you came out to support him, and I got to meet you, and so we've become friends, and we're trying to figure out, now you guys have since moved from St. Louis to Nashville, so we're trying to figure out, do we come there, or do you come back to St. Louis? So I'm sure that we'll figure that out.
I hope so. It's been way too long. And St. Louis is amazing, so we'd love to come there. But Nashville has a lot to offer as well.
It does. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that because it is. It's a booming town right now. So when I met you, you and Edward were both VPs, tech execs at SSM. And I think at one point you were weren't you like the regional CIO, interim CIO for SSM?
Yeah, correct. So I joined SSM in 2018 after serving at a variety of healthcare organizations across the country. And when I joined, I was the regional CIO for our Oklahoma ministry. And it was a great role, really enjoyed it, and was called up and asked to take a larger role at the corporate office and headquarters in St. Louis, where I led all of the clinical applications. So SSM, you know, $10 billion organization in multiple states in the Midwest. Great regional healthcare integrated delivery system, had a great experience there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that you, it is. It's a wonderful healthcare system. But you know what's so funny to me, and Jean, we'll talk about this a little bit, but you and Edward are both now CIOs. The conversation has to be so interesting. And I love it because certainly you guys have a lot in common, right? And a lot you can talk about, a lot that you can bounce off of one another. But I'm sure the conversation's interested in your household.
Yeah, it's very interesting. When Edward and I first met, we were both going through divorces and challenging times, and we were colleagues and peers at SSM. And then as our journeys and our careers continued, he became a CIO first, and then I shortly thereafter followed as a CIO, both of us in healthcare, but in very different industries. He has since moved to a different role, but I think you know this, Lisa, working with someone who always has your best interest, who can be both a mentor, an advocate, a challenger of what you're thinking about, who can really push you to be your best. I think that's what we all want. And to have that both at work and at home, it's just such a gift.
It is. It is. And you're right. I know what that's like too, because Greg and I work with one another, and he is always pushing me.
right? To go to the next level. And I love that. And we know what each other is talking about, right? And so for you guys, both being tech execs, the same is true for you. So before we get into a lot, you know, of what you're doing today and career, I really want you to take me back to your growing up years. Where did you grow up? What were your interests as a little girl? Because you've probably been in healthcare technology almost your whole entire career, I think.
That is very true, Lisa. And it might surprise people, but I've had a long career here and hopefully it surprises people. So I'm originally from the Midwest, from Wisconsin. I grew up a middle child of educator parents. Both of my parents were college professors. And one of the things that really made an impact on me as a young adult was that my mother went back and got her PhD when I was 13. And so those are the days of floppy disks and lots of word processing, WordPerfect, and all of that. And I'm sure I was typing at least a part of it to help her out because it was so difficult those days. But as I grew up and as I pursued my educational goals, getting my bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, followed by my master's, I decided that, you know, I really wanted to make a difference. And when I graduated in 2000, making a difference meant having a website and being in that space. So I started my career as a web project manager, helping people create web pages and front page at a small multimedia company in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And that was really exciting, but I knew there was more. I was very, very fortunate to get an opportunity to join the local health system, a well-recognized health system, Gunderson Lutheran, in the western part of Wisconsin, right thereafter. And they said, hey, we'd love to have you serve as a liaison between our developers and our customers as we develop a homegrown electronic health record. So this is pre the days of Epic being in the news and Cerner. They had developed their own tool called Clinical Workstation. So starting in 2002, if you can believe it, I worked at that organization helping their customers, the clinicians, the caregivers, the administrative folks, to really use technology meaningfully. And I really feel like I found my calling in that space. So fast forward a couple of years, I was looking for even more things to do. So I had the fortune to move back to Milwaukee and join Aurora Healthcare, which is now known as Advocate Health, which last time I looked was the fifth largest system in the country. And I had an amazing almost 10 years at Aurora Advocate, serving in the technology team. And again, really continuing to advance. These are the days of meaningful use, high tech, all these things that we've heard of in the industry, and just a very, very exciting time for electronic health records and the maturity of that space. Fast forward a couple of years, I was recruited to take an amazing opportunity in New Mexico, which led to me leaving Wisconsin and moving to Albuquerque, where I had a chance to be a VP of strategy and planning at Presbyterian Healthcare, followed by progressive roles leading to me becoming their interim CIO before I departed for SSM and that regional CIO position in Oklahoma City. So lots of great experiences in my childhood, but really what was most meaningful to me is, again, this idea of education and really working hard for what you want in progressive growth. And I think sometimes when I meet with folks that I'm mentoring or earlier in their career, they say, hey, it looks so easy. Or, hey, it happened really fast for you. And you really need to walk people through, how did you get here? Because it was a journey. And there's not anything that I think back to that wasn't meaningful, whether it was my first failed project. You know, the first time my opportunity fell through, the first time I didn't get that job I applied for. All of those things, they made me who I am today as a leader and are so important in my story and who I am today.
That is such, there's so much packed in there, Jean. I don't know if I can unpack it all. There's so much packed in there. But the first thing I love that your mom, when you were 13 years old, goes back. I mean, what a model for you, right? To say, you never stop growing. You never stop going to the next level. And you didn't mention this, but I know you have a doctorate. You have a doctorate.
I'm working on my doctorate. I have to do my dissertation. I'm so close.
Oh.
I definitely need that last little bit. Classes are done. Just have to finish my dissertation. Then I will be there myself. I'm very excited to be done.
That's so awesome. And I'm sure, if your mom is still alive, I don't know if she is, but I'm sure she's so proud of you for doing that. The other thing I really love about what you just said, it's one thing at a time. There is no silver bullet, right, Jean, to success, to get to that level. You've done the work along the way, and everything you've done, failed and successful things, really prepared you for what you're even doing today. So don't ever discount any of those opportunities. Let me ask you this. So when you got tapped on the shoulder to go to Presbyterian, which I think was in New Mexico, right? Did you get tapped on the shoulder for that, Jean, or did you see something and apply? How'd that come about?
That's a great question. And I think, often when I'm talking again to people earlier in their career, they think these opportunities just magically appear. And in most cases in my career early on, they kind of did. It was, hey, this makes sense. And maybe it wasn't a direct ladder, but it was this little side path to get to that next point. You go from project manager to business analyst to program manager or whatever that pivot kind of is to get you onto that position. As you get later in your career, it's really about the relationships and the people that you know, and then finding a need that really highlights your skills. So I was very fortunate along the way, like so many folks, to have people who were really sponsors or advocates for me, as well as mentors. I definitely had both. I actually did something, Lisa, and I kind of cringe thinking about it, but it was what I did. I had a year and I called it the year of Jean. And it was about really developing me and focusing on what did I need to do. I asked people at that time. I was at Aurora Healthcare and we had an amazing CHRO, Amy Rizloff. And I asked her, I tapped her on the shoulder and said, would you be my mentor? You're the head of HR for this large 40,000 person organization at that time. Would you be my mentor? And she so graciously said, absolutely. And when you're working with someone who's very different than yourself, who has a very different experience, they're able to expose you to different perspectives and different things that you never would have considered because they're not even in your realm of possibility. I'm a very methodical technology kind of person. She's a little bit more free-spirited, HR, mm-hmm. There's no that they're thinking about. And so those opportunities were huge. So for Presbyterian and for, I would say, all of the opportunities that followed, it's really about having those conversations with people in the network, really expressing a desire to get to that next level, finding those possible opportunities, and then saying, hey, I'm interested. Because it's not just I see something, I apply. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard a lot about, applicant tracking systems and how hard they are to permeate. Relationships and folks you've worked with in the past, folks you're part of a professional organization with, those are your connections. And we have to use those connections to find those opportunities.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. I've got a good friend, Orv Kimbrough, that says your next opportunity is on the other side of a relationship. And so sometimes, Jean, we think, oh, that's the fluffy stuff, the networking, the relationship, but truly it's so important. And the operative word here is there's a difference between building relationships and just networking to me, but it's really mm-hmm. building those relationships. And those people may hear of something, an organization needing something, and you want to be top of mind. You want them to say, oh, you know who would be really wonderful at that particular role? It's Jean. And so I could not agree more. Well, you've had just a wonderful, wonderful career, and I love everything you've said so far. But now you are at the CIO at Summit BHC there in Nashville. So some of our listeners may not know. If they're in Nashville, they may, but if they're not in Nashville, they may not know. So tell us a little bit about Summit BHC.
Yeah, so I'm at Summit Behavioral Healthcare. We call it Summit BHC or SBHC. And we are a national provider of behavioral health services, both psychiatric and substance use disorder facilities. So we have 37 inpatient hospitals in 20 states, and we serve thousands of patients daily with these needs. And I think we all are touched in some way by behavioral health issues, especially since the pandemic, and especially since we're able to talk about it a little more freely than we have in the past. So I joined Summit in 2022, and I've really been working to advance the maturity of technology, not only within our organization, but within behavioral healthcare, because it did lag a little bit behind traditional healthcare, which is even behind some other industries like retail or banking.
Right.
So I've been enjoying my ride here. We're physically located here in Franklin, Tennessee, right outside of Nashville, where we have a vibrant presence and, you know, what we're calling the healthcare hub of the country.
Yes, I know. I've read that. The healthcare city is what Nashville is.
Well, we just heard the great news about Cerner Oracle relocating here. So their new headquarters will be coming soon. I think we're very excited about what that means. And obviously HCA, CHS, Acadia, lots of company, LifePoint, lots of companies here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Well, okay. So you've already kind of told me, because I was going to say, what have been your big initiatives? And you've already told me you're maturing not just your organization, but behavioral healthcare in general. So I know you've gotten involved, and we'll talk about that. You've gotten involved in several organizations. What kind of culture, Jean, are you trying to build within the IT? Certainly organizations have cultures, but I always say that IT has cultures too, and you better pay attention to it, because to attract the right people and the right talent, you've got to pay attention to your culture. So what kind of culture are you building at Summit BHC?
Well, as the first CIO here at Summit, when I came in, you know, I think it's kind of like a tool that you've never used, or an ingredient in a recipe you've never used. You've done without that. So when I came in and said, hey, let's really look at technology as an accelerator, as a lever, the organization kind of looked at me and said, help us understand how. So for me, it's all about strategic partnerships. And that is both internally, but then also externally. As a smaller team and a smaller organization than the multi-billion dollar organizations I've been in the past, you really need to leverage not only your strategic partners inside the company, but also outside of the company to get enough bandwidth to do the work that you need to do meaningfully. So for me, again, that partnership model is so, so important. And then it's all about collaboration, iteration, and constantly striving to improve what we're delivering. It's kind of that idea of continued excellence and recognizing that we have an opportunity to grow in every space, every day, through small incremental 1% changes.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's not quantum leaps. Jean, to your point, it's little incremental changes.
I wish it was. That'd be easier.
I wish it was. Sometimes it can be, but most often it is not. So tell me this, what do you believe are some of the biggest opportunities and challenges that are facing healthcare organizations today? And the tech and the emerging technologies, you and I have talked a lot about Gen AI and some of the other things, but what do you feel like are some of the biggest challenges facing healthcare in today's world?
Yeah, I think when we start thinking about the challenges facing healthcare, you know, I don't see them necessarily as technology challenges. I see them as technology opportunities. So we think about staffing, behavioral healthcare, no surprise, we don't have enough clinicians providing the care. We don't have enough practitioners. We don't have enough staff. We don't have enough of the nurses, the techs, all of those roles. So it's really around, how do we create models to optimize the folks that we have so they can be doing the right work as efficiently, as effectively, and as in the most satisfying way as possible? So whether that's implementing HR systems, HRIS tools that allow them to very easily do their training, or electronic health records that allow them to spend more time at the patient's bedside because they're not having to spend the time documenting. All of those types of things are things that we can do today to improve how we're providing care and behavioral health. You know, I also think that as we look at the future, it is going to be around how do we utilize and harness the technology, whether it's AI or other tools that are available to us to continue to evolve and change our operating model. If we think about healthcare, behavioral healthcare, it's a very similar to how it has been for 50 years. Mm-hmm. Things need to change. And we've seen the stories about, you know, Walgreens and Walmart and everyone who's divesting their healthcare because it's so hard. The industry is hard. And so there's a lot of folks coming in to disrupt and having mixed results. But if we think about what is the future, it's really around different models that meet our patients where they're at and address their needs on that continuum. So it's not, hey, I have a behavioral health issue today. It's, I have one for my life. And how do we deal with that full cycle instead of just that one point on the, you know, on the entire spectrum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. And I'm confident, and I know you are too, that a lot of these tools and emerging technologies are going to help, you know, the practitioners do their job more efficiently so that they can spend more time with the patient. And it's ultimately about the patient, right? It's about getting better outcomes for the patients, having a better patient experience. It's about the patient. So tell me this now, you know, you've already, I love this. I was going to ask you about collaboration and partnerships, and we've already talked about that. So it's like you've read my mind, Jean, already, and some of the things I want to talk to you about. But tell me about, what about the digital divide? Do you have any thoughts around this and how we can get over the digital divide? And what I mean by that is there are people that do not have access. What can we do to provide better access to all?
Yeah, and I think that's always a problem in healthcare, right? The access to care. And I think in behavioral health, the way it manifests is, you know, capacity. And we know the industry metrics for us is that right now the number of beds available in behavioral health is 25% of the demand. And we know that many of the people who need these services aren't even asking for them. They're not at that point of maturity to even know that they need them. So if you think about that and think about the real demand, it's even greater than that. So when we start to think about the digital divide and some of the opportunities there, again, Lisa, I think it goes back to this idea of meeting people where they're at. So for example, on our website, we know that a lot of people want to connect with us, but you know, especially some of the newer generations, they just want to text. They want to text and they want to chat. They don't want to get on the phone and call and talk to someone about their problems. They just want to chat with someone and ask a quick little question. We allow them to do that through the use of our tools, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times we're having to spend some time following up on patients. You know, maybe you reached out today, you weren't quite sure in your substance use disorder journey if you're ready for that treatment, if it really is a problem that needs you to be an inpatient in a facility, you're not ready to take that leap. Well, maybe that means that we need to follow up with you multiple times. How do we put in place systems, which we have, so that we remember to follow up with you every day to really see where you're at? You know, over the holidays, we know that the holidays are a really hard time if you're dealing with things emotionally. So how do we give people that extra touch point using technology so that they feel like someone's thinking about them, like someone cares about them? Mm-hmm. So those are all some of the things that we do to really cross that divide, but also to extend our physical bricks and mortar inpatient locations so that we are able to help people get in. And then once they're in, you know, then it becomes a different conversation where we talk a lot about telehealth. We talk about some of the things that we do, you know, from a monitoring, from our alumni program for people that have successfully completed treatment and all of those types of patient engagement kind of tools. But first, you got to get them through the door and they need to, you know, we need to do everything we can so that they have that access that they require.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had no idea 25%, the supply is 25% of the demand right now. I had no idea. I maybe we'll do a part two podcast because I don't want to get into that here. But, you know, I would love to explore because we have seen a rise, right? I would love to explore the roots of that, Gene. I wonder, you know, if it's not, I mean, technology has a bright side and technology can have a dark side. And sometimes I wonder about social media and what that's really doing to people's mental health.
I think that's a very fair point, Lisa. And as a mother of two teenage daughters, you know, you definitely wonder about that. And I think we all see it. And then we go back to when we were young and we didn't have that. And it's very much a difficult balance. And I talk to parents frequently, like, what are you doing? What are you restricting? What are you monitoring? What are you allowing? Because I don't think anyone has the answer. And I think for every child, it's a little different. Mm-hmm. But there is an impact. We know that. Every study tells us that. And the question is, how do you address that? How do you try to mitigate from that? And then how do you prevent it? And it's all of those.
Yeah. We'll have to do a separate podcast to explore that.
Yeah, that would be a very passionate one.
I know you're passionate about it. Well, let me ask you one more question, then we're going to take a quick break. Sure. So this isn't your first rodeo as a CIO, and we know that women traditionally do not reach that level as much as men. I know at one point it was less than 25% of women that reached the CIO level. What advice would you give if there's other younger female leaders out there that say, I would love to aspire to be a CIO one day? What would you tell them, Jean?
I would tell them, Lisa, that you can do anything and that your only limitation is yourself. You know, I've been very fortunate, again, to have people who've surrounded me, who've treated me like an equal. And they've been a diverse group of people of all genders, of all ethnicities, of all abilities, of all levels. And I've been fortunate. And, you know, going back to something we talked about a little earlier, I love the saying, decisions about your career are made in a room you're not in, right?
Yes.
And so this idea of how do you continue to show your interest? How do you continue to advance yourself in a way that's authentic, that it's real? I make a very big point, and I do this in my LinkedIn, and I do this in everything I do, to really be authentic to who I am. As a person, as a wife, as a mother, as a CIO, because I think a lot of people think that they need to be something else. And I think we learn as we get a little older and a little wiser that there are always people that we will not appeal to. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We don't have to appeal to everyone. But if you try to appeal to everyone, you're not being authentic and true to who you are, and you appeal to no one. So how do you find that balance where you can be an authentic version of yourself? And I love Carla Evans from Morgan Stanley, who has a couple books out, and she talks about the different versions of you and how they're all authentic, but you bring them to different conversations and situations. And I would say to those aspiring to be a CIO, think about your surroundings, think about your environments, and continue to bring to bear the best version of yourself to every conversation. Express that desire to get to that level, that next level, the next level beyond that. Because so often we think people know, oh, they know I want that promotion. Oh, no, they know I want this next opportunity. They don't know. And I can guarantee a colleague of yours of either gender is telling them that they want it. So you need to be able to articulate where you want to go so that people can open that door for you. Mm-hmm. But it is possible. I guess I'm proof of it. There's many female CIOs that I've networked with and out there, and they're doing amazing work, just like male CIOs as well. But you have to get comfortable with sometimes being uncomfortable. I think it strikes me every once in a while, I'll be sitting in a room and I'll recognize I'm the only female in the room. And I don't think about it because it's just natural to me at this point. But you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, such great words of advice. I love everything you said. And authenticity is so important, Jean. And why be a carbon copy of someone else, right? But to your point too, it's important for you to let people know what you're aspiring to, because people cannot read your mind. And we talk about that, you know, is your name being mentioned when you're not in the room? And you want it to be in a good way. You want it to be in a good way.
Always in a positive way. That's kind of unsaid.
That's
yes.
Right. Exactly. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jean DeVries-Sands on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Jean. So, Jean, we've talked a lot about CIOs. This is not your first rodeo. How do you personally see the role of the CIO evolving? That's the first question. And then secondly, what are those traits that are going to be needed now and in the future in your mind to be a good CIO?
That's a really good question, Lisa. And I know it's kind of a polarizing topic. The CIO role, by necessity, has to span a lot of different disciplines today, whether it's infrastructure, security, applications, data and analytics. And what I think we've seen over the last couple of years is this hybrid role or these combinations roles, CDIO, Chief Data or Chief Digital Information Officer, you know, kind of these hybrid roles coming together that live either as the CIO or above the CIO in some cases. So definitely that's something out there. As I see it, I think the CIO role continues to evolve to be something where you have a CTO, which is the Chief Technology Officer role, focus a little bit more on the technology and the infrastructure and those elements, whereas the CIO role becomes a little bit more of a trusted business advisor, a change advocate, and an enabler. So as I think about this, goes hand in hand with your second part of the question around what are those key competencies, skills that I think are essential for someone to be successful as a CIO. Well, obviously, you need a technology acumen. You know, you don't need to know everything. I've never been a networking person. I've never been in a network closet. You wouldn't want me to be. I'd screw something up. That's okay. CIOs come from a diversity of backgrounds where they've done different things, but you need to have a general understanding of how technology works. Even if you're coming in as from a nursing background or a non-technical, you need to understand the basics of technology, the terminology, the nomenclature, the tools, the software, all of those types of things. So there's that basic table stakes part. Then we really go to the other part of it, which is most important, which is that strategic mindset and the ability to really be a change advocate and an influencer. Early in my career, I was a project manager. And as a project manager, you learn very quickly, you don't have people reporting to you, you have to lead through influence. And I often tell a story. I was at a concert a couple of years ago and traffic was stuck. And so me and my friend waited in a car for an hour to try to get traffic out of this lot that we were in. And people kept pulling in front of us and we were never going to get out. And we were tired and wanted to go home and all those types of things. So I'm like, I'm going to check this out. I'm a problem solver. Get out of the car, start looking. People are all going to the left when they should be going to the right. And literally there was an exit 20 feet to the right that they could have been using, but everyone was queuing up to the left. So there's some cars in the way. So I start directing traffic. And, you know, I'm there in my concert goer apparel. And someone says to me, do you work here? Well, of course I don't work here. Like, you know, I'm trying to solve a problem. And we solve that problem. We pull out and, you know, everyone's happy because the traffic jam has dissipated for all of us going right. But that's really what the role of the CIO is. Mm-hmm. It's to figure things out and to be that influencer who can stand in a meeting with the C CFO, the COO, the CEO, and say, let's think about this. And let's remember that technology is there. I often tell my team, we solve a lot of problems from a people, process, and technology perspective. And technology is usually the smallest piece of it. It's really, when you start to dig in, it's really people and process many times that we need to focus on. So those are organizational change management opportunities that we need to really be able to own and dive into, even though we're by title alone, you know, the technology person.
Mm-hmm.
So lots there, but that's kind of my thoughts about.
Oh, awesome. I love it. Characteristics. Do you have traffic controller on your LinkedIn profile? I don't know. I didn't see that.
No, but I'm working on adding that. I figure it was only once, so I'm not adding it quite yet. I have to do it twice, then I'll be able to put it on.
But it's a great metaphor. It really is, Jane, for exactly what you just described. And the CIO, the CDIO, the CTO is there to remove obstacles. That's what you did. You were a problem solver and remove the obstacles so the traffic could flow through. And same thing with the organization is doing that same thing so the organization can continue to flow. I love that. Well, let's talk just a little bit. I know we don't want traffic to get worse in Nashville, but it might.
I don't want traffic to get worse in Nashville. None of us do.
Yeah. No. And I'm thinking, with Oracle moving their headquarters there, I'm not really sure, but that's going to be great, I think, for Nashville. But Nashville is booming. I mean, you guys made the move there about, I guess, almost 2 years ago. And we've already kind of talked about this, that it's dubbed the healthcare city. But, you know, there is a... there is a council, I think it's called the Nashville Healthcare Council, and I think you're a part of that, aren't you, Jane? Did you join that?
So that is, so yes and no, Lisa, to that question. So Nashville Healthcare Council has a lot of different groups, including Leadership Healthcare. I am a part of that group. There's a million different healthcare groups here in Nashville, including some more technology-focused and some not. So Summit, my company, is not yet a part of Nashville Healthcare Council. I think hopefully in the near term we will be joining. But I certainly am a part of this leadership healthcare group that is a little more of an intimate forum for discussion about key technology and key problems that have to be solved, technology and otherwise.
Best practice.
There's a couple other groups that are super vibrant here in Nashville as well. We have our Technology Council, the Nashville Technology Council, the NTC, and then also our HIMSS chapter, Health Information Management Society, that has over 2,000 members here in Nashville alone. So we have a lot of really great groups of like-minded people, healthcare, technology, healthcare, and non-healthcare that are really coming together to say, how can we continue to grow our city in a meaningful way? How can we get the talent that we desperately need with our very low unemployment rates? And how can we continue to address the macro issues like the traffic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I read something yesterday, a stat. It's less than 3% now, right? Unemployment. I want to say
it's under. They say it's right around 2% in the county we're located in.
Wow.
Yes, it is very low.
Very low. Well, here's my point in bringing all of that up. I mean, truly, it has been an intentional effort by Nashville to build this ecosystem. It's not just the healthcare organizations, because you've got Vanderbilt Hospital there. You've got these amazing healthcare organizations, but it's building the whole ecosystem, right, Jane? And it's dubbed the healthcare city, but it's not by chance. I mean, it truly has been very intentional. And I love that. So let's see. I want to talk about, for a few minutes, I want to talk about this because this is really important, I think. And it's not just females, men as well. But Jane, you wear a lot of hats. You wear a lot of hats, and I call it, it's either a hat wearer or a plate spinner, whichever one you want, but you're spinning a lot of plates too. I mean, you're the CIO, you're involved in the community, you're a wife. I think you guys have what, 4 kids?
6 together.
Six,
yeah.
Together. I mean, it's a lot. So what are some of the strategies that you personally have used to, I guess, keep yourself sane. It's one thing.
Yeah, I think especially for us, Lisa, that's always a challenge because, as you know, my husband and I both have very demanding careers and we're very fortunate. You know, there's a saying, it takes a village, and it absolutely does. We're very fortunate. My ex-husband is very involved, very, very helpful, lives right down the street from us. So it really does take a village for us to be successful in our day-to-day. I had a child who had to go home sick yesterday unexpectedly from school. He was able to pick her up and address that. You know, I think it's also around creating systems to deal with things so that you don't have as much to think about and to address on a daily basis. And what I mean by that is we all think about, you know, some of these famous CEOs that wear the same outfit every single day. I'm not quite there, but regardless, you know, we have a certain routine and we follow the routine, whether it's the time we wake up, the things we do in the morning, what happens after school ends for our kids, what we do at the work day, where I start my day, where I end my day. There's just a lot of routines and structure we've put in place because if you don't plan, you plan to fail, right? Mm-hmm. So for us, exercise is a really important element that it's so easy to let go. And I did a LinkedIn post that resonated with a lot of people last year on this, just around how much I struggle when I'm home to decide between, do I spend time with my kids? Do I spend time working or do I exercise? And often I wasn't making the choice that long-term is probably best for me and my company and for everyone, which is exercise. So when I travel, it's a lot easier because some of those distractions are gone and it's a different environment. But I've really recognized that for myself, if I don't exercise in the morning, even if that's just a short walk, that I might not ever get that exercise in for the day. So it's building in these approaches so that you're guaranteeing success. And, you know, you hear a lot of people say, start small, make your bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. So then when you get into it at the end of the day, you feel like you've done something. If that's the only thing you can do, it's something. So again, it's starting small, continuing to build, but then finding things that you can structure and then also outsourcing, whether it's my ex-husband. We recently have hired a nanny who comes and helps us drive around the kids at night so that they can do their activities. It is very difficult to balance it all for any of us. And if I make it look easy, it's only because I have this support system and it's only because I'm used to it at this point because it's not easy for any parent. One child, mm-hmm. six kids, job, full-time, part-time, you know, at the house, it's hard for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I could not agree with you more. But what I heard you say is that there are systems, there's non-negotiables, there's discipline. There's discipline.
Absolutely.
How you lead and live, right, Jean? I mean, just that discipline and the consistency of doing the exercise, you're taking care of yourself, you're hopefully then showing up for your kids, showing up for your business as your best self, right? And if we lose our health, then we've lost
everything.
Everything, right?
Yeah.
Well, I know. And I didn't ask you this, but how was Tulsa? You and Edward just
Tulsa went. Was great. We love Tulsa. We have been fans of the Gathering Place since I lived in Oklahoma City, and it is amazing to see. I don't know if it's a revival, but just the reinvigoration of what I think was a little bit of a sleepy town through the incentives that they did for people moving there over COVID, but also just all the tech companies coming in and being located there. So it's just really neat to watch as kind of at the bird's eye level, it all happening there. But Tulsa's amazing. I'm constantly amazed by Oklahoma's investment in outdoor space, whether it's Gathering Place, whether it's just parks, walking trails. I could not believe the people I saw outside being physically active, which I think that communing with nature is so important and re-energizing for all of us. It's just great.
For our mental health. I mean, sometimes
absolutely.
I know for myself, just taking a walk in the park give me a completely different perspective. There is a author, Mark Batterson, and he always says, change of place, change plus change of pace equals change of perspective. And I think that's
so true.
So true, right? Well, our mutual friend, Dan Roberts and Denise Roberts, who is now our CCXO. I know that you guys had dinner and Dan said you guys really had a lovely time. But, you know, is there anything, let me ask you this question, then we're going to talk about something extra. Is there anything on your bucket list, Jean, that you want to accomplish this year? Is there anything on your bucket list?
Professionally or personally, Lisa?
It doesn't matter. It's just for fun.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think we always have a huge bucket list. So I've been, I tell people I'm on day probably 465 of my Duolingo journey. And I've been, with my husband being Dutch, I've been trying to learn Dutch. And so I think one of the things I'm really excited about is we're taking the whole family to the Netherlands this summer for a couple of weeks. And I'll be really trying to practice my Dutch and really trying to embrace that culture, knowing that it ties so much to my, to who my husband is and my stepchildren.
I love that. I love it. See, I knew there would be something there that you're doing, because you're just that type of person. Well, let me ask you. So this is called Something Extra, Jean. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think for me, Lisa, it's all about passion. And, you know, I'm a very passionate person. And sometimes I have to tell people, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just really excited because I'm passionate about everything. I'm passionate about a certain pico de gallo. I'm passionate about projects we're doing. I'm passionate about a certain exercise routine I like to do, Les Mills body pump. I'm passionate about so many things because they're important to me. And that's one of the things that I think people need to really help folks understand who they are. And I think the choices that we make with our very limited time and our very limited attention show who we are. So I really want to double down and be passionate about many of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Well, I have noticed that about you. You're just so passionate and so positive. And I think that's probably one of the many reasons I love being around you, Jean. So, hey, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Thank you for being on the show today.
I had such a good time. Thank you so much.
I know that it's going to help our listeners. So thanks so much.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.